from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last Wednesday in New York City when the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team rolled down the streets of Manhattan to the cheers of thousands of fans. The women had just won the World Cup again. In Paris, in the stadium after their win, fans chanted, USA, equal pay. So last Wednesday in New York City, Governor Andrew Cuomo took pictures with the players and announced that he had signed new legislation designed to prohibit unequal pay on the basis of gender or on the basis of a protected class. You might know the old standard, equal pay for equal work. Cuomo announced a new legal reframing, equal pay for substantially similar work. But what does substantially similar mean? Well, last week, 98PXY morning radio host Whitney Young announced that she was resigning her position. She cited a large disparity between what she was being paid and what her male morning co-host was being paid. Young said she does not have a new job lined up, but her pay situation violated her core values, and so she's done at PXY. The station released a statement saying, quote, "We are disappointed that Whitney has decided to leave. While we will not comment further on the specifics of this situation, we do believe that our compensation practices are fair," end quote. And critics have argued that pay disparities can be misleading and that many factors can come into play, experience, performance, and more. This hour, a conversation about the new law in New York State and the goal of finding equal pay. Our guests this hour include a member of the New York State Assembly. Jamie Romeo is here. Jamie, thanks for taking the time. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm glad for being here, Evan.
All right. Also good to have in studio is Justin Cordello, owner of the Cordello Law Firm. Welcome back, Justin. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Evan. Good to be here.
Also with us is Whitney Young, the former morning show host for 98PXY. Whitney, welcome. Thanks
Hello.
For being here.
Thank you for having me.
And on the line with us is Mark Cassini, former supervisor for the town of Gates. And Mark, I think you are the CAO of American Rock Salt, but there's lots of alphabet soup. What are you?
You've got it right. At least today I am.
Oh, good. Well, the congratulations. CAO. Okay.
Thank you.
And Mark, thanks for taking the time. Mark's going to kind of offer not only his perspective as someone who's worked in government, but also in business. And I want to start just by asking Jamie to kind of give us a little bit of a look at what the legislation is. You supported the legislation.
Yes.
Tell us what drove your support for it and why you think it needed to happen now.
Well, the two bills that were voted on in June, this past June, that the governor just recently signed last week, deal with, I think, some of the enforcement and the implementation of what was commonly referred to as equal pay for equal work. Because what we found was when a worker was coming to make a complaint, if they weren't able to demonstrate that it was clearly exactly equal pay for equal work, that they weren't able to then be successful for trying to raise that parity. So the bill allows for the redefinition of that, like your introduction alluded to substantially the same number of work. But the bill that we passed actually allows that for a differential in pay based on seniority or a merit system and other things. So it's not an across the board. There is options in the law for different considerations as this is a complex issue. The other bill that was signed into law last week that passed the legislature this past June also it prohibits employers from asking for salary history when they're going through that employment application process so that they can't determine someone's salary based off of what they were paid previously in other positions. Part of this is because there has been for a very long time now, we know about the gender wage gap, and it's historical. So when women are moving into different new sectors or employers, we want them to be able to have a fresh start. So that way they're being judged on their merits, on their ability and their value to bring to that company, not necessarily what somebody else had deemed for them in potentially an unfair system.
Okay. Justin, from your perspective with the law, how significant are these changes in New York State?
In the last 20 years that I've been practicing law, this past month has been a real game changer for workers' rights in New York State. The two laws that Jamie just detailed, as well as new harassment laws that have will take effect shortly, are really increasing workers' rights in ways that, in my practice, I've never seen before, and also incentivizing attorneys to take on these claims.
I'm looking at the terms equal pay for equal work versus the new standard of equal pay for substantially similar, and it sounds pretty subjective. In other words, an employer may be more likely to say, look, we define substantially similar by XYZ. An employee may view it differently. I mean, sounds like it's going to be boom times for the legal profession with this. I mean, I don't mean to make light of it, but it seems more subjective. Is that wrong?
I think it is going to be more difficult for the employers because now they're going to need to justify pay differentials and not be able to hide behind the fact that a comparator isn't exactly identical. Mm-hmm. And you also have to layer on the laws that the state has passed also include treble damages, which is basically triple damages. So the stakes are high. When an employer gets this wrong, there's going to be a real financial bite.
Okay. Mark Cassini, from your perspective, again, both in government and in business, do you support these changes?
Yes, I do, actually. I think it's not a silver bullet, with all respect to all the panelists here. I don't see this as a silver bullet. I still see the progress being gradual, but these changes will be helpful in the future to close the gap. And I will add, I don't mean to throw stats out, but we do pretty well in New York, and we've seen a lot of improvement. We've gone from having a huge disparity to right now in New York, we earn 89 cents per dollar when a woman is compared to a man. So women are making 89 cents, and it's not good, but it's moving in the right direction. It's the best in the country, according to the Department of Labor from their report in April of 2018. So we're seeing the pay gap narrow in this state.
Mark,
in part from these laws.
Yeah, Mark, the critics that I have seen have said that there is so much nuance when it comes to pay negotiations that, you know, a worker ought to want to try to prove their worth and an employer ought to have a lot of room to assign value, and that this removes some of that opportunity for people like you, Mark, who are, you know, employers who might want to assign different values to different workers. Do you see it that way?
I would say that this isn't a silver bullet, but it certainly puts some more parameters around pay performance. And specifically, one of the things that really wasn't focused on yet, but I'm sure it will be, is when you are asking employees who are coming in, a lot of times the employer has a propensity to ask an employee, gee, what is your wage history? What's your salary history? Because you try, you know, the natural inclination is to try to get a person. It has nothing to do with being a man or a woman, at the least cost possible. And you know, the market does drive that a little bit, but one of the new laws prevents an employer from asking that. So that's going to be a big change for employers around the area. They must not ask that going forward. And you know, the differences in moving to a protected class from the old language, it is very subjective. And again, it's not a silver bullet. It's the right direction. But I think when you start looking at job performance, you have to look at how employees act, whether they're late to work constantly. That becomes, and I'm sure, you know, I think it's Justin can talk to that a little bit. Some of the issues of poor quality of work, education, experience, all those things. Seniority is a big issue. That's one of the things that is very difficult to overcome when it comes to pay disparity. But it has nothing to do with being a man or a woman. It's how long you've been with a specific company, and certainly in the public sector, that's true. So there's no silver bullet. That's really what I'm saying.
Okay. Well, in a moment, we'll come back to Mark and kind of talk about this question of asking about a pay history that the Assemblywoman mentioned as part of the new legislation. But let's try to understand Whitney's story as best we can here, because it made quite a splash last week. And
yes,
the interesting thing is, over the weekend when you and I had a conversation, you indicated that this is something that you've been working on for a number of months. It is purely coincidental that for you it happened in the same week that we had a parade for the U.S. Women's National Team that has made this sort of a rallying cry. It's not time to kind of coincide with that at all, is it?
No, I think that the issue is pervasive. It's ongoing. And so I don't even, you know, as I said to you over the phone, I don't keep up with sports at all. I mispronounced Megan Rapinoe.
When he said to me, I'm not trying to piggyback off Megan Rapinoe. And I said, I take the point because
yes,
it's repeated.
Yes, which, yeah, case in point. So, you know, I've been a card-carrying feminist, if you will, for the last 10 years, and women's issues have been of great importance to me. And I found myself kind of in the middle of one of the, again, most prevalent women's issues today. And so for me, it was not an option to kind of just, you know, keep quiet and keep my nose to the grindstone and just keep going and hope for better pay in the future. That wasn't an option.
How long were you at PXY?
I was there for, it would have been 2 years in September, and I worked there previously for a little over a year, a couple years back.
Okay. And so, you were a morning show host.
Yes.
You and a male colleague.
Yes.
And the statement you put out last week said that you were leaving that position because you had learned that what you made was just a little bit more than half of what he was making. Is that right?
Less. Wait.
You were making a little bit more than half.
Right.
So roughly half of what he was making.
Yes, correct.
Was your determination.
Correct.
What did you do about that when you found out? You tried to renegotiate your salary?
I did. So the first time I voiced my frustration was, well, actually, when my contract was initially offered, I was extremely uncomfortable with the salary that was offered. I felt, quite frankly, insulted based on my experience in education and also knowing that at that time, knowing that he made much more. And I kind of was told that I was told to look at my 3-year contract as 3 1-year contracts with the opportunity to renegotiate each year. When I brought that up at the year mark, I was told I must have misunderstood and that no one has ever seen that happen successfully. So that was kind of a bait and switch. And then when I expressed my frustration and desire to negotiate a raise with my boss, I was told that they did not feel that there was, I guess they didn't, they said they didn't have the ammo to justify a raise for me based on my contributions.
Did you tell them that you were concerned that you were being paid a lot less and that you felt that gender had something to do with it?
I did not specifically use the term gender or gender wage gap, but I did say I'm concerned and uncomfortable about the fact that my male co-host is making nearly double what I'm making.
So you were coming up in September on 2 years on a 3-year contract?
So I was just over a year into the morning show contract.
Got it. Okay.
And almost 2 years into working there.
Did you think, okay, you know what? They're shutting the door for now. I'm just going to keep cranking at this, and at the end of this next contract, then I'm going to kind of put my foot down, or what was it that made you decide I can't even stay another week here?
Because it was very demoralizing. It was very it was hard to be motivated and enthusiastic about the job and the company, knowing that this pay disparity existed, and also knowing that it has existed prior to me being there. I was told that my predecessor also did not ever make the same amount as my male co-host. So it seems to be that women are sort of routinely underpaid, or that their contributions are minimized at this company. So I did not want to be a part of it anymore.
Now, your male morning co-host is a little bit older than you and has been there a little bit longer.
Yes, right? Correct.
So do you think he should have been making more than you?
Absolutely. But not as much as he was. I think that, based on he's 7 years older and he's been doing radio for, I believe, 15 years. However, I have my own experience, which is why I was qualified for the job in the first place. I was qualified to be his co-hosts with him. And so I do believe he should have been making more due to seniority, but again, not nearly double.
Did you feel like there was a risk to doing this way? I mean, you put out a public statement.
Yes.
It's a very sensitive time regarding a national conversation about equal pay and what that means and what that doesn't mean. And I'm sure your employer would prefer to either keep you working there or to be able to do this privately.
Yes.
I asked you that on the phone this weekend. Are you sure you're comfortable talking about this?
Mm-hmm.
How much did you think, look, I can't, I got to be careful? Or did you think that the moment is right to at least talk more publicly? How did you weigh all of that?
It is intimidating. The idea of retaliation or some sort of legal action being taken. But I think that the conversation, to me, is important enough where the benefit outweighs that risk.
And so this is where I think our guests from different perspectives can weigh in. In your situation, Whitney, you're looking at what you were paid as a morning radio host alongside what a man was being paid as a morning radio host. And now the law doesn't say equal pay for equal work. It says equal pay for substantially similar work. And an employer might say, and I don't want to speak for PXY, they put out a statement, and certainly they're entitled to come on this program in the future if they like, though I mean, I understand right now that they're not doing that. But they may argue, okay, yes, you were both co-hosting. How many hours a day were you co-hosting? How what was the show?
4 hour show.
4 hour show.
Yes.
So roughly half of your, assume 8 hours a day was on the air.
Yes.
They might say that's 50%, but for the other 50%, you and your co-host were doing different things. So mm-hmm. it's not actually substantially similar because 50% of it, now I don't know what you were doing for the other 50%, but they maybe make that argument. Is there an argument there?
Yeah, there is. We did different things. There were things that I think that his list of responsibilities and tasks was a bit longer than mine, but I believe that the things that I've always sort of been a firm believer, and this might sound like a cop out, but I've been a firm believer in quality over quantity. And so I may not do as much, but I believe that what I do is excellent, or the best that I can, without sounding cocky and whatnot. I believe that what I was doing was quality work. And we also did different things. I was the only female voice at the station for nearly a year. So I was doing a lot more commercial work. I was doing a lot more voiceover work. So he might have been doing one thing and I was doing something else, which is why I think that this new legislation is important, because our jobs, our tasks were not equal, but they were substantially equal. Is that the term?
Yeah.
Substantially
equal. Similar.
Substantially similar. Yeah. Yes.
And I don't know if it's fair to ask the Assemblywoman to weigh in on Whitney's case specifically, but are these the kinds of cases, generally speaking, that the law is aimed to deal with?
I won't speak specifically to any cases, but I think it is, because to go on Mark's point that he made, this is not a silver bullet, because the burden is still on the employee to make the case that there is this disparity. There is no enforcement tool where someone's going into companies to making sure that they're doing the right thing. Somebody still has to file that complaint. Somebody still has to bring that forward and make the case. This is providing them a little bit more tools to do it. And I think what I just in regards to the whole issue, and I kind of use myself in this example, as a member of the legislature, regardless of the amount of years I have in, of my gender or anything else, I am paid the same as all my colleagues, other than committee chairs or other things. We all have the same base pay because the job as a function has been worth the value. Is this is the amount for the work that you're going to do for this position of being in the state assembly. You're paid this base rate. And then there's added things on top of it based off of additional responsibilities or things like that. I think the similar situations we're finding here is where that base level of salary is not equitable. Are you starting off at the negotiating position for different people at about the same value before you add on to other considerations and things? And I think that's an added conversation of why this is a very difficult issue, because it is subjective, and that doesn't necessarily help. The law doesn't help necessarily with that, because the only thing we can do right now with the way that our system is built is to provide employees that are willing to take that risk, have that courage to go out and go to their employers and rock the boat, giving them tools that they can actually be heard and heard so there's due process on both sides.
Let me bring in Justin and Mark. Justin Cordello, owner of the Cordello Law Firm, I should mention, is not formally representing Whitney Young here. Justin's here because this is his work field. He represents clients. On the worker side, generally speaking, do you represent employers as well?
Almost exclusively employees.
Okay, employees. Workers. Okay, yep. And so in this in this new sort of legal landscape, not talking about Whitney's case specifically, but generally speaking, what kind of an argument can an employer make saying, look, they may have done the same job for 2 hours of the day or 4 hours or 6 hours of an eight-hour day, but we had them doing other things. It's not exactly substantially similar, and that therefore we ought to be entitled to pay them different things.
So the employer is going to have to come forward with proof of the differences, and there are lots of ways they can do that. One way would be through a job description, showing that, they've taken the time to go through and write job descriptions for these different positions, and here are the different tasks. They could also look at performance evaluations. Let's look at how we evaluated these employees. They were evaluated differently on different metrics. That might be a way for them to show some type of difference that would justify the disparity. What's interesting, too, about the new law that we haven't really mentioned about is in New York, you can compare employees who aren't necessarily working for the same establishment provided that they are in the same geographic region. So in Whitney's example, she had a morning male co-host, so that really lent itself to comparison. But there are situations where there might not be someone that's directly available at the establishment you're working where you can compare yourself to, but you could look at other employers to see what other employers are paying employees who have similar positions to yours.
Now, Mark Cassini, I'm looking at an email from a listener named Bruce who says, equal pay for equal work is fine with me. Equal pay for similar work, well, that opens the floodgates for lawsuits and employers are about to get soaked. That's from Bruce. Mark Cassini, are you worried that you're going to get soaked?
I think if you do the right thing, that won't happen. No, I'm not. Actually. And, you know, I will tell you, Whitney, I'm very proud of you for stepping forward. I'm very sorry you had to go through this. But let me ask you a question. If you don't want to answer, that's fine.
Okay.
Did your employer come back to you and say, Whitney, let's put the plan together that will get you your salary goals, your compensation goals in, you know, 3 years or 2 years or 4 years? Did they put a plan together? Forget all the issues and the nuances of this law, and there are many. Did they put a plan together for you to reach those compensation goals?
They did not. No.
I mean, that in of itself tells me all I need to know. A good employer is going to say to their employee, they're going to listen, number one. And yes, documentation is important. They could benchmark seniority. There's a lot of things that they could say. Don't compare, and your male co-host should be making more, whether it's based on the quantity, quality, how many years they've been there. Forget that for a second.
Mm-hmm.
They should come back to you and say, you're a valuable asset to this company. We understand your concern. Let's try to figure out. We can't do it today. We can't do it this year, but we can do it over a period of 3 or 4 years and give you a reasonable plan. If they did not do that, they have failed, with all respect to my friends at PXY. You should have at least tried to put a plan together to meet your objectives if they valued you as an employee.
I actually
did.
That's
my opinion.
I appreciate that. I actually did give them a number that I knew was actually still below what my male co-host was making, and I was told I could look forward to working toward that in the next 10 to 15 years. So that was the plan that was laid out.
They told you 10 to 15 years?
Yes.
Okay. Mark, go ahead.
I think that's more than reasonable. And again, with I'm sure Justin can jump in or Jamie, but to me, the nuances of the law are one thing, but fairness to employee is so important. And if they're not treating you fairly and at least not giving you a reasonable plan to meet your objectives, your goals, whether they're financial or other, then they're failing you as an employee and they have some work to do as an employer.
Let me grab a phone call because we've got a call from Rachel Barnhart, who wants to weigh in on the conversation. She's a former broadcaster locally, and she's recently won an election that she's likely to be on her way to serving on the Monroe County Legislature. And I know you've got a lot to say on these kinds of issues. Go ahead, Rachel.
Yes, I'll try to be brief. This is an excellent discussion. And to sort of dovetail on what Mark Cassini was just saying, gender discrimination in pay is very insidious. And this legislation, particularly salary history, is extremely important. But there's so much more that we have to do. For example, what Whitney just described, what opportunities did she have to do equal work? When I reposted what Whitney said about her decision to leave WPXY, I got tons of responses from people. Lots of excuses. Well, she wasn't very good. She wasn't well known. She didn't work as hard. She didn't do as much. Okay, that's how pay discrimination works. You come up with lots of excuses not to pay women. And one of those excuses is they don't simply have the same opportunities to make as much as men. And the broadcasting industry, and I lived this, is extremely patriarchal. It still is. Male voices are valued more. And I'm hoping that this legislation causes people to take a step back, causes these stations take a step back and kind of look at what they're doing and why women are paid less and how they're treating them in the workplace.
So, Rachel, I want to ask you to stay on the line because when you bring up sort of opportunity to do more, I have a question for Whitney that I think kind of ties into some of what Rachel just said. which is that I don't know at all what the situation was like with you and your morning co-host in terms of what you were doing when you weren't on the air.
Mm-hmm.
I know that in some places people will walk in and they'll say, hey, I'm young, I'm single, work me to the bone, I'll prove my value, you know, I don't care if I'm working 80 hours a week, whatever. And I know others will walk in and say, I'm going to work as hard as I possibly can during my 8 hours a day, but I expect you to respect that beyond that and not be pushed to the point where this becomes my life and I have no life.
Yes.
How did you sort of view that? And I want to be careful here because I want to say again, PXY can come on this program whenever they like if they want to sit down and talk about this. And I respect that. And I respect them. They're colleagues over there. I don't know all of your superiors, but I'm sure they're nice people.
Mm-hmm.
But were you asked to do beyond 40 hours? Was this a case where, you know, did you draw lines or did you say, look, I'm not getting the opportunity to do more? How did you view those kind of questions?
I mean, look, companies will take as much as they can get from each individual employee. That way they don't have to employ more people and pay more money via salary. So they will take as much as they can get. And I am very comfortable drawing the line and setting healthy boundaries. I have been in jobs previously when I was working in New York City where I was working 12, 14 hour days. And it was extremely unhealthy. And I told my employer many times before I even accepted the job, I said, look, I'm not going to put myself in a situation that is not sustainable or that becomes unhealthy. They still wanted me. They still wanted me, offered me the job. And that was that. And I worked an 8 hour day. But I did not work 80 hours a week.
Did you feel like if you had been willing to work more hours, that would have changed the situation? Because I don't know what your co-host was doing. And again, he seems like a good guy.
Mm-hmm. But very hardworking guy. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I, you know, did that play against you? You saying trying to draw healthy boundaries, did that go against you?
I mean, I had already signed the contract. I had already received the offer. So they had already placed a value on me from the beginning before I sort of set these boundaries.
Okay.
So I mean, they probably would argue that that worked against me. That would be a sort of a convenient scapegoat, I think, at this point. But I do not believe overall that my contributions were, again, worth half.
Yeah. So Rachel, to the point where you bring up opportunity to do more, how do you view that question from the perspective of an employer who might say, look, this person's willing to go all day, all night, all weekend, and yeah, we'll compensate more based on that, Rachel?
Certainly, job performance plays a role. But when I look at industries like radio or television, you know, there are times when the male anchors and co-hosts simply get more opportunities to be promoted to have more value. So they create value for the male employee that they're simply not creating for the female employee. And, you know, the lean-in movement, so to speak, did a real disservice to women by kind of blaming them for the fact that they weren't being paid more. Well, you just have to ask. You have to learn how to negotiate. You know, I've been in situations where I've done everything but crawl on my hands and knees begging for more money, and it just isn't happening. And I've been that person who worked the 80 hours and went all in, and it didn't matter. And I've been the person, you know, when I had to switch stations once, and I had to lie about how much money I was making because I knew that if I was honest, that it would cost me tens of thousands of dollars. And that's the position that women have been placed in. And I think that we have to have an honest conversation about why we're in this position and what employers can do to make sure that we are being valued, that we're being given opportunities, and that they're investing in us. You know, if WPXY had a problem with Whitney, what did they do? As Marcassini pointed out, what did they do to say, okay, this is what you want. How do we get you there? What can we do to improve your training, to give you more opportunities, to promote you more, to make sure that we are comfortable paying you what you want? That's how this discrimination thing works. And that's something that the legislation hopefully forces companies to review, but it's not going to change that dynamic. I mean, companies are really going to have to step back and look at how they're fundamentally treating women in the workplace compared to men.
Rachel, thanks. Thanks for that. And I know we'll
Thank
talk
you.
Again soon. Rachel Barnhart calling in. So, Marcassini, on that point, you raised the point that you, and again, I'm always trying to be fair here. I wasn't in the room with Whitney and PXY. I'm taking Whitney's account here, and this is one side of the story. But Mark, you're saying when they failed to tell her, okay, look, you're not getting the raise you want. Here's why, or here's how we can get you on a path to get there. Do you do that? Is it a case where if an employee comes to you and says, hey, I'm making X and I want Y, and you look at Y and you say to yourself, not going to happen, do you have an obligation to tell that employee, number one, either that's never going to happen and here's why, or if that is going to happen, here's what has to happen first and here's how we get there? I mean, what is the roadmap that an employer needs to put down in that scenario?
So any employers that are listening, any managers are listening, documentation is very important. You have to document. Otherwise, you're going to find yourself in a lot of hot water. And people like Justin are going to be up in your business like nobody's.
Well, anyway, understandably so.
the answer is this. You need to listen. You need to provide a plan to that employee. You may not be able to get the employee to where they're going, but you need to be honest with them and say, okay, you know, this path is not going to get you there. But if you want this compensation or you want to do this job, here's the pathway to get there. And you have to, to the best of your ability, make sure that happens. If you lay out a plan, the employee has to do your part, but the employer has to do their part. So you don't tell an employee no. You never tell an employee no, because the answer is you can get there, but you have to lay out realistic goals and objectives for them to meet in order to get there. And it may mean that they have to take a different path than they're currently on. But you have to listen. You should be benchmarking. Make sure that you are treating that employee fairly, whether it's a man or a woman. And you're paying them, compensating them fairly, because occasionally you'll find that there are disparities, and through, you know, maybe no fault of the employer, maybe the person was hired in at a very low rate. There's a whole host of things that can happen, but you have to listen, you have to lay out a plan, and you have to be realistic and follow through.
Justin Cordello, does that work for you?
Yeah, I think the things Mark's saying are right on target with having an interactive dialogue with the employee, as opposed to just shutting down the conversation and threatening, you know, use of a non-compete agreement or something like that if they, you know, dare to, you know, look at employment elsewhere.
So, Whitney, Rachel is saying she thinks the industry, generally speaking, doesn't value women the way it values men. Do you agree?
I do. As a whole, yes.
Okay. And what do you do about that now? Are you going to leave the industry, or are you going to try to stay in the industry?
There is a lot of work to be done in the industry that I would love to be a part of. I would love to be a part of that effort toward more equality. I'm not sure at this point, though. I haven't really decided, to be honest with you.
Do you have friends or family saying, wow, you pulled the cord on this. You don't have another job lined up.
Yeah.
You know, you must really
My
feel
parents
like this
are
violated.
Ecstatic. Yeah. It's, you know, I mean, like I said in my statement, it was a risky move at best and stupid at worst. But I'm just sort of at this moment riding the wave and kind of seeing what happens and hoping for something better to come along.
We have to fit in our only break of the hour. Whitney's not used to one break in an hour that's very short,
no.
But that's probably very exciting for you because there's very little interruption, but we're going to do it right now. And we're going to come right back to some of your feedback. We'll read more feedback as we talk about not just Whitney Young's story, but the new legislation that Governor Cuomo rolled out last week, essentially during the parade for the women's national soccer team in New York City. A lot of talk about equal pay, and the member of the New York State Assembly, Jamie Romeo, is here with us talking about why she voted for the legislation and why the Assembly wanted to address questions on equal pay. Justin Cordello is the owner of the Cordello Law Firm in Rochester, here to address from his expertise the legal questions associated with the change in the law. Mark Cassini is on the line with us, former supervisor of the town of Gates, the CAO of American Rock Salt, who for the first time in my memory is mostly agreeing with Governor Cuomo today. So I don't know if Mark's not feeling well, but it's a good conversation. And so let's get that only break of the hour, and we're going to come back, not only get your feedback, but we'll talk about that change that says they can't ask you for your past pay history up front. That's a big one. So a lot more to coming up here. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation about the songs of the summer, or really, the song of the summer. How did we determine what the song of the summer actually is? And do we know what it is already? And why, culturally, do certain songs stay with us longer than others? Especially when it just seems like a churn of pop music all the time. The way songs stand out in our brains next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. And as Whitney heads out of the studio, she's got other engagements fitting on her calendar. We're really appreciative of her time today. Justin Cordello, Jamie Romeo, member of the New York State Assembly, Mark Cassini on the line with us. And let's get back to your feedback on these questions of the change in the law. DeMela in Rochester next. Go ahead, DeMela.
Yes, I was just saying that I majored in business. And when I was a kid and I was growing up, I had an uncle who had a brand new truck, and he would never drive it to work. And I asked him, I said, why don't you drive your new truck to work? And he said, no, I can't do that. I remember him saying, if a white man knows that you have a brand new truck, I'd be fired. There's no way I can drive my truck and keep my job. And then I started thinking about how would I be treated in the workforce as a black man. So I ended up joining the Army. And one of the biggest reasons I joined the Army is because I knew, my brother had told me, that they don't hide your pay. You know exactly what everybody makes based on time and grade, time and service. And that really appealed to me. And I always had a nasty taste in my mouth for corporate America, but I tried it anyway. I came out here 23 years ago, took a position with one of the corporations, and I stayed there maybe 3 months before I tendered my resignation because I just felt that I was being paid less, at least by some of them, and I knew that they couldn't match my skills or my background, and so I walked. Mm.
Any regrets over that, DeMela?
Nope, never looked back. I left. I started a janitorial business. Mm-hmm. I ran that for 19 years, and now I'm currently launching a 501c3 educational nonprofit organization. Mm.
Thank you. And I should mention, Assemblywoman Woman Romeo, you know, we've been talking a lot about gender pay, but we're talking about protected classes with this, right? You want to hit that real briefly because I think that's an important distinction here.
Right, and that's while this was rolled out with kind of specificity to the gender wage gap, because the legislation does extend this to the protected classes, it will include age, race, creed, color, national origin, sexual orientation. So in all of the protected classes within the New York State human rights law, which is actually expanded from the national protected classes. So this will, while we are talking about the gender wage gap, the goal of this is that pay differentials shouldn't be based on any of these factors that have nothing to do with someone's job performance or their qualifications to hold a position.
Okay. Justin, you want to add to that?
No, that's one of the things that is a real game changer with this law, where it's expanding equal pay for substantially similar work beyond just gender-based, but to all protected classes. So someone in DeMeo's situation would be able to bring a claim if he felt as though he was being paid less. And his uncle's fears about driving that new truck might have been well-founded.
Mm-hmm. DeMela, anything you want to add there? I mean, what do you make of what you're hearing about these changes in the law designed to protect cases like this?
No, I think the only thing I would say is I think it's great that changes are being made, but I also feel, and I've always felt, that it should be illegal to hide pay. I think it should be required that everybody's pay is listed. Everybody should know what each other, in my opinion, you should know what your colleagues and your colleagues and your peers are making and your subordinate superiors. I think it should be illegal to hide it. I think it reeks of corruption and it reeks of discrimination.
I agree, DeMeo. In pay transparency, I think, is, you know, a key element to ultimately eliminating the pay disparity based on gender. And there are countries, the UK being one, where they require employers to disclose the salaries of their employees on an annual basis.
All of them.
As long as the employer has at least 250 employees, yes. And shame is a very powerful motivation when the numbers come out, and it's very difficult for a CEO to explain the differences based on gender in his company's pay scales.
So let's hit this with all three of our guests now. This question on coming in not just for a worker who's trying to get a raise, trying to understand, okay, what do my coworkers make? What if it's a woman in Whitney Young's case, what does a male co-host make? You can ask. Sometimes they'll tell you, but sometimes it's hard to get information. That's one scenario. But the law now saying that an employer cannot demand that a prospective hire tell them what they've been making. I mean, Assuming Women Romeo, is that that's right, right? That's the change?
Yes.
Okay. And from your perspective, you voted for that change. Why? Why was that a concern?
Well, and part of that is, and this is, you know, outside of, we know that there's wage disparity between lots of different groups and segments of the population for many reasons, but it's what this will do is that, unfortunately, there has been a lot of inequities built into systems in our society over the years, whether it's governments, public-private institutions, and salary history can be based off of your experience in those other situations, in those other institutions. So you might be coming in where you weren't being paid to your full value from a previous employment. And what we don't want to continue to carry these inequities into the future as we're trying to right the ship. Because unfortunately, the system, unlike the UK and these other systems, this is still employee. The greatest burden is on the employee. The employee has to stand up and assert for their rights. The employer does not necessarily have to take a proactive step and make sure they should be. That's what this law is hoping to encourage, but it does not necessarily mandate that. But what I think the important part of that is that we really want to try to start to turn over a new leaf. Let's just blanket the slate. Let's start judging people based on their merit and the value that they bring to an organization.
Mark Cassini, any concern from your perspective as an employer that you're, you know, on this one?
It's a bit of a mixed bag. In the private sector, you try to get the best value, the highest quality employee at the least cost. So in some cases, you're going to be asking, and it has nothing to do with gender. It's just trying to get the best value you can get. You ask an employee their salary history. I understand why the law was passed, and it'll eventually be a good thing, but it's going to make it a little challenging for HR professionals and for private companies that are trying to find somebody at the least possible cost and best and highest possible quality.
Okay. Justin, what would you say is the challenge now for companies based on this change?
Well, I don't represent companies, but, you know, the law not only applies to prospective employees, but also current employees. So if you're working for a company and you're looking to transfer or be promoted, they can't look at your factor in your salary history in determining your pay. So I think that's going to be a real challenge for an employer dealing with internal candidates who are seeking promotions and transfers, et cetera.
Sounds like you agree with that, Mark?
Yes, I agree.
Overall, you know, Justin, doing the work that you do almost exclusively on the behalf of workers, are you happy to see this change? I mean, essentially, attorneys generally tell me, I don't care if I'm happy or not about the law. I work to understand it and then represent clients. But do you think that this is more about fairness for workers? Do you think this is the right change for New York State? And by the way, you can plead the fifth if you like, but I'm curious to know from an employment law perspective, is this a good direction for the state to go?
No, when we started the hour, Evan, I told you these laws, as well as some other laws that were passed last month, are real game changers for my practice in representing workers. There's treble damages. There's attorney's fees. There are extended statute of limitations for bringing these claims. These are going to enable workers to speak truth to power and to pursue claims. And in talking here with Jamie this afternoon, that sounds like that was exactly the legislature's intent, is to give folks, workers, a mechanism to right the ship.
So let me grab another phone call before we... Boy, it's 12:51. A lot of interest here. Rich in Rochester. Go ahead, Rich.
Hey, how you doing, Evan?
Very good, sir. Go ahead.
One thing, you sort of touched on it about, you know, employers have always been in this position of keeping salaries secret so that they could get that lowest salary for the highest quality. And it sounds like they're couching it in that way, but in the end, it was in the level of exploitation. How about if we even go to the next level? I listened to on a podcast.
Rich, we lost you. That is I'm sorry about that, Rich. We lost the call. That's a rarity. We hear from Rich with some frequency. So as we get ready to wrap the hour, the feedback on this is very interesting, not only about the law, but on Whitney Young's case. You know, Whitney joined us earlier in the hour. She had to depart at 12:40 for a 1 o'clock appointment, but she was the former morning show host for 98PXY, who announced last week that she was leaving her job. She has no other job lined up, but she felt that the pay disparity between her and her male morning co-host was so great that essentially it offended her core values and that she couldn't continue to work under those circumstances. PXY is certainly an institution in the city, and they are colleagues and people that we respect, and we'd be happy to have a conversation with them if they wanted to come on in the future and talk about that. They did put out a statement saying that they were disappointed that Whitney Young chose to leave, but they feel that their pay structure and what they pay, their practices, are fair. So I know it can be a little complicated and a little sticky, and you know, as much as Whitney's heard a lot of supportive stuff, there's also some nasty stuff that I'm not going to read on the air that I could. I mean, we've been getting some email from people who are pretty skeptical, or not just skeptical of Whitney's story, but generally look at with the women's national team. There's a lot of support for the women's national team, but I'm seeing it right here in our email, some skepticism as well. Mark Cassini, were you a skeptic of any? Would you have been chanting equal pay if you were in the stadium in Paris when they won the World Cup?
Well, it's interesting. The Wimbledon folks, I watched both finals of Wimbledon. Wimbledon has achieved equity. Even though the revenue associated with gentlemen's tennis, that's what they call gentlemen's tennis, and the ladies' tennis was different, I don't see why they couldn't do the same with FIFA. And I know FIFA's a not-for-profit, but I honestly think in that case, yes. When you start getting into things like the NBA and the WNBA, when you have private entities that where the disparities are so great, and you're dealing with companies that own these big companies that own these various teams, and you're not going to see that for a while. But yeah, I would have been agreeing with them on that.
So Justin Cordello, as the owner of the Cordello Law Firm, you do work for workers who feel like their rights have been violated. But generally speaking, do you advise that if they can, they try to settle things before it gets to litigation, that there are strategies to take to their employer if they feel like something is wrong, if there is a disparity based on gender or a protected class? What's the route that you would generally advise people to take?
Well, generally, I would tell folks to contact an attorney and learn exactly what their rights are, because these laws are nuanced and they're dynamic. They're changing. Just this past month, my practice has changed a lot in terms of what employee rights are. And at this point, because the laws are so new, we don't really have any regulations and we don't have any court opinions interpreting these laws at this point. So it's always, I think, a good place to start is to talk with an employment attorney. But yes, litigation is the sport of kings. And if you can avoid it, I highly recommend avoiding it and trying to get an interactive dialogue going with your employer.
If I come to you and say, look, you know, here's the situation, or if someone comes to you and is concerned about what's going on with their pay, and they ask you, in your estimation, in your experience, do most employers do the right thing if you bring it to their attention? Is that too general? I mean, there's a huge range of what employers will do. I'm sure you've seen everything.
Well, and what is do the right thing? You know, most employers believe they are doing the right thing. They're employing you.
But I think that's part of the question here. Most employers probably don't think that they're discriminating. I would hope that they don't think that.
Correct.
I don't think that they're like behind closed doors going, can you believe that the women are taking this deal? They probably think that they're doing the right thing. So that when I say, do you think they'll do the right thing? If someone asks you that, if you call something to their attention, do you usually see action before litigation?
You know, we can look at Whitney's example. You know, I didn't get a chance to tell Whitney this, but my daughters are very disappointed that she's not on the radio any longer. They really enjoyed listening to her radio morning program. And, you know, that the fact that they can't do that anymore is, you know, I think important, because, you know, Whitney had some value there to, and in a way that, you know, some employees might not have, and therefore not be able to justify closing the disparity. Kind of getting back to your question,
Well, it sounds to me like the answer is you can never predict it. Even with someone like Whitney, she's gone now.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you can't predict, and that's why people like Justin and his firm exist. 30 seconds, Mark Cassini. Any other changes you'd want to see or concerns you'd raise as an employer going forward?
There's plenty of challenges. I think that we've touched on a lot of them. We could probably have another show and touch on even more, but we've covered it all, at least for this particular show.
And is this the first time you've agreed with the governor on my show?
I think this may be a first, yes.
Mark is the former supervisor of the town of Gates, the CAO of American Rock Salt. Thanks, Mark. As always, good to have you.
I appreciate it.
And our thanks to the member of the New York State Assembly who joined us in studio this hour, Jamie Romeo. Always good to see you. Thanks
good
for
to
the
see
time.
You, Evan. Thanks.
Justin Cordello, online where, Justin?
www.cordellolaw.com.
Thanks for taking the time to be here. And our thanks to Whitney Young, former morning show host for 98 PXY, who shared her story as well with us this hour. Short break, more connections coming up.